Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
Our final author has a tale to tell of MI5 and Nazi hunting and espionage that seems to thrive in that era, and Agent Jack. I apologise now for a moment. It has been said that name drops keep falling on my head because I remember meeting Kim Philby. At least he said he was Kim Philby. Oh, whatever will be, will be. But now, I know it's time to press the starter button and welcome our author, Robert Hutton.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like to talk to you about Nancy Brown. There's lots that we don't know about Nancy. But we do know that in 1943, she was in her mid-20s, she's living with her parents, and she's working for Brighton Council. And one Sunday afternoon that April, she sits down in a London flat with some friends to tell them about a Luftwaffe raid on the town that she'd been caught up in a few days earlier. "I'd no sooner sat down in Ward's," she said, "to have my coffee when suddenly crack, 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 and everybody dived to the back of the shop because they felt sure the bullets were coming in at the windows. And then boom, and she bangs the table. Boom, boom, and the windows blew in and out, and the doors blew in and out. And when we came out, we could see great columns of smoke coming up." Tip and run raids, which was what she'd experienced, where Luftwaffe fighters flew low over the channel and then strafed an English port, were quite common. What makes Nancy's experience unusual is that she believed the raid was the result of her work. Nancy Brown believed herself to be a Nazi spy, and she thought that the man that she was talking to, whom she knew as Jack King, was the Gestapo's man in London. In fact, his name was Eric Roberts. He was a former bank clerk who lived a life of domestic bliss in Epsom with his wife and three young children. And for most of the previous 20 years, he had been an agent of MI5. During the war, it was his job to identify British people who wanted Germany to win, and he was proving more successful at it than anyone in MI5 had thought possible. Nancy was one of around 20 British Nazi sympathisers who reported to Roberts between 42 and 45 and believed they were spying for him. The network uncovered real secrets. They got the first night vision equipment, details of the Mosquito bomber, Bletchley Park, and what was known as Operation Window, the plan to confuse German radar by dropping chaff, which saved many RAF pilots' lives. And more than that, they helped him to identify around 500 people who they believed would be willing to help Germany invade. And those people were in various degrees of consciousness as to the existence of this network. So some will not have been aware they were on the list at all, and some will have had their suspicions that Nancy and her friends were in contact with someone from Germany, and they were quite happy about that. Nancy herself identified targets for the RAF, for the Luftwaffe rather, sorry. She handed hand-drawn maps of Brighton to Roberts to pass on to Berlin. And one extraordinary moment, she promises to lead invaders through the town, round the defences when they arrive. She believes all of these reports are going back to Berlin. And in the midst of this raid that she's caught up in, she thinks that the Luftwaffe is aiming for sites that she's identified. So let's hear a bit more from her. She's talking about the fighters. "Just as they got to the end of the pier, they seemed to turn their engines on and they flew straight up like that, branched out and started machine gunning and cannon firing and dropped a lot of bombs. You know, it was almost cruel. They were such good near misses. One of them, do you remember my telling you about the guns on the top of Telephone House? Well, one large bomb fell two houses to the right, to the north of it, demolishing a block of flats and a Baptist church. Oh, it was marvellous." And then she turns to the question of casualties. "A greengrocer had his head blown off, and umpteen casualties through cut glass and things. And another bomb had fallen on a school clinic. It killed a clerk there and badly injured two of the girls, and killed one expectant mother and about two children. Now, Eric Roberts filed a lot of reports for MI5, and very rarely did he say how he felt, but on this occasion he offered his view of what he'd just heard. He said, "I looked in vain at the faces of these three women for any signs of contrition. Nancy Brown looked a fine, healthy specimen of an Englishwoman, but it was obvious that the deaths of these people meant absolutely nothing to her. I thought of the excellent impression that this woman would make on a jury. She sat there pleased and happy to think that the news she had given me resulted in the deaths and damage of that last raid." MI5 were so horrified by what they'd discovered that although the plan had originally been that Roberts would be the first of a number of agents doing this, they refused to widen the operation. And it began a sort of three-year row about whether he should be shut down or whether he should have colleagues or what. They were sufficiently horrified that they never told the Home Office what they were doing. They didn't tell Churchill what they were doing because they were worried that he would tell the Home Secretary what they'd been up to. And at the end of the war, they covered it up. None of the people that Roberts was, as it were, spying on ever knew. And in fact, two of them were given medals, Nazi medals, in an extraordinary ceremony at the start of 1946. Roberts presents two of his finest agents with Nazi medals that MI5 has gone to some trouble to procure. Thanks them for their services, explains the war has not gone quite as they'd hoped, and urges them to stay in touch. And these people went to their graves thinking that they had this great secret, that they had spent the war spying for Hitler, and they never knew the greater secret, that they had spent the war as dupes of MI5. That decision means that Britain has never had to confront the fact that, like Germany and France and the rest of Europe, we had our share of wicked people. Not just people who would have collaborated under pressure, but people like Nancy Brown, who yearned for the invader to come. She told Roberts once, "They'd make a better race of us." It also means that Eric Roberts was never recognised. He left MI5 a few years later under something of a cloud and retired to the west coast of Canada, and then, having got to the west coast of Canada, felt he hadn't got far enough and went to Vancouver Island, where he was in a restaurant and ran into a colleague from MI5 coming out of the loo and thought, "Oh my goodness, I have to go further." And so went to Salt Spring Island, which is a very pleasant island off Vancouver Island, where he could watch the ships coming in from his house. Now, Roberts knew that was the bargain. He knew he would never get any glory, and he accepted that. But he was one of MI5's greatest undercover men, and his story is worth telling. And I spent 3 years researching this story, and because it was completely unknown, there are barely any references to it. Even in the secret histories, there's one page of MI5's post-war history that, if you know what it's talking about, is clearly talking about this. And I started to think that I was going mad. I wondered if it was some great delusion. And then in the summer of 2017, I went to see the son of one of the people who had been one of Roberts' agents. And we had a very nice lunch, and I took him through his father's MI5 file. And at the end of the lunch, he said, "This is extraordinary. I find this very hard to reconcile with the man I knew as my father. But it does explain this." And he showed me his father's Nazi medal, which he'd found going through his father's things after his death. And he said to his mother, "What is this, Mum?" And his mother, who knew what his father had done, or knew, as it were, part of the story, said, that was your grandfather's for working on the Austrian railway. And so he hung it on his toilet wall, where I believe it still is. Thank you.
For more about the Oldie magazine, Amber Lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.